1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. It's another edition of Feldis and Kale, and we are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Dan, welcome back. Great to see you, as always.
Great to see you too.
And we are ready to go and talk some energy today. And our guest is State Senator David Waters of Dover. Senator Waters represents District 4, which includes Barrington, Dover, Rollinsford, and Somersworth. And Senator Waters, a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Cal, and it's good to be with you, and good to be with you too, Dan.
You got it. Thanks for jumping on. I really appreciate everything you did. I had the honor and privilege of serving with David in the State Senate for a number of years, and dear friends and colleagues. And David really has led the charge on so many issues, including, Ken, as you mentioned on the outset, a bunch of energy issues, including offshore wind and coastal resiliency. So in light of the recent report from the UN on the climate crisis confronting all of us, David, I was hopeful that you might be providing an update to listeners about what's going on in New Hampshire, largely led by you, on coastal resiliency and offshore wind.
Well, thank you, Dan. And the report from the IPCC certainly puts a punctuation mark on what's been developing. And, you know, I always respond to these by saying, okay, you know, what practical things can we in New Hampshire do that will deal with these issues and help keep our economy strong as well? And I guess I'll start with coastal resilience, because we've done a lot of good work on this. A number of years ago, we had a Coastal Risk and Hazards Commission that, you know, with support of the governor, and issued a report that laid out, you know, bipartisan unanimous about what we need to do to deal with storm surge, sea level rise, and extreme precipitation. And we're getting them all faster than we thought we were. We estimated maybe 6 inches to 2 feet of sea level rise by 2050, and about maybe 1 to 3 feet by 2100. And, you know, these new numbers show that's too conservative. And so we have to adjust constantly to be able to, you know, keep our coastal communities and the way of life on the coast viable and economically strong. So there are lots of measures that we can do. We can make sure infrastructure is elevated or moved, or we have shoreline preparation that can deal with these and mitigate these problems. And, you know, the Department of Transportation and Fish and Game and municipalities have all kind of embedded this now in their planning. And with good planning, we can make sure that we're ready for these changes. And I will say on this as well, Dan, that there's really some important money in the infrastructure bill that got passed this morning. You know, Senator Hassan was on the negotiators on this and made sure there's money in there for coastal resilience so that we're going to get some federal help for projects that that we need to do. I guess the other side of this, though, is, okay, what are we going to do about the changing climate? And, you know, what can we do to, you know, to decelerate the warming that is coming? And, you know, New Hampshire's seen, you know, 3 degrees warmer in the year round than in 1970, and it's just, it's here, and what can we do? And here's where offshore wind could play a big part. You know, we happen to live on the Gulf of Maine, which is considered the Saudi Arabia of wind resources. It's just some of the best in the world, and so we have the opportunity to get enormous amounts of renewable energy from the Gulf of Maine, but also the jobs. You know, it's a $3 to $5 billion construction phase, and it's a $12 to $15 billion supply chain, and thousands of jobs. And you know, if we can attract them here to use our ports and to use our manufacturing and our labor, it'd be huge for the economy while hitting a lot of good renewable energy goals. And so the governor called for the creation of a Gulf of Maine task force with Maine and Massachusetts, and under the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or BOEM, and had its first meeting in December of 2019, and then it kind of stalled because of COVID, and also because the previous administration was really resisting offshore wind development. But now things are going gangbusters, and so we set up, again, very bipartisan, and, you know, with the support of the governor, a commission on offshore wind and port development. And it's been meeting for about a year, And the end of next week, we're going to go live with a website that everything people want to know about offshore wind, kind of offshore wind 101, what's happening in New England, up and down the East Coast, all the possibilities for jobs and industry and transmission, and all the work of the commission. And, you know, also very importantly, seeing how we can make sure our fisheries are protected and the coastal environment, which is such a treasure to make sure this development occurs the right way. So, you know, that said, I do think the missing piece for New Hampshire is we do not have renewable energy goals the way all the other states around us do. And that to me is an essential missing piece to the puzzle, Dan.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, efforts to increase our goals and make them more in line with the surrounding states, unfortunately, were met with a veto. But those standards are critical in our renewable portfolio standard, no doubt about it, David. And, you know, certainly we, with your efforts, got some things through, and certainly things that you and I teamed up on, including community solar, low to middle income households and manufactured home parks having ground-mounted solar arrays. Historic effort there that got through, and community choice aggregation, a bill I sponsored, you co-sponsored, to make sure that local municipalities can unlock their solar savings potentials and aggregate and purchase together and reduce costs for everybody. We've made some gains, but you're absolutely right. Those standards are not anywhere where they need to be, and it's a jobs issue.
Well, it sure is, Dan. I think it's an interesting case where us folks in the legislature and the government haven't caught up with where the industry is going.
Right.
There are good jobs all across the country, all across our region. These energy sources are booming. And it's not like, you know, it's mandated or it's not cost effective and so on. These prices now are beating other forms of energy generation. And so we've got to make sure we have a regulatory and a legal environment in New Hampshire, like the states around us, so that the industry wants to come here and that we can take advantage of this and consumers get lower energy and the right to make these choices for their energy as well. I think the opportunity is really there. I think we're going to get there on this. It's been slow for New Hampshire, but I think we had a lot of breakthroughs this session, and people seem to becoming around on it. And the other factor here is that the utilities now really want to do this, because bottom line is we're going to see an electrification of the transportation sector. We're going to see a lot of fossil fuel heating and manufacturing. It's going to go electric as well. So we need kind of all hands on deck to get the electricity supply with clean, renewable energy increase. The utilities see it. I mean, it's why battery storage is important as a piece here to keep costs down. So we're really moving in this direction. But I think that, you know, the other states around us, if you set this goal, then it lets the utilities plan and it lets the investors plan who want to come in and invest big money, but they want to know that there are goals here. And I mean, this is why I've been advocating for a procurement bill, Senate Bill 151, to get a commitment to procure offshore wind power, because every state that's done it, and all the rest of them have, they use that to leverage investment. $100 million going into the ports down in Massachusetts, $20 to $30 million going into workforce training, and protection of the environment and fisheries. So these are the kind of tools that you get if you do a procurement and set these kinds of goals, and it would be good for New Hampshire. Good for energy, but also great for our economy.
Our guest today on Feldis and Kale is State Senator David Waters of Dover. And Senator Waters represents District 4, including Barrington, Dover, Rollinsford, and Somersworth. Have to take a quick break. We'll return right here, 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We're proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back. It's Feldis and Kale on 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And joining us today, we're talking some energy, is State Senator David Waters of Dover. District 4 also representing Barrington, Rollinsford, and Somersworth. And Senator Waters, you talked about the offshore wind development. How far could that go in terms of powering our state? How much could we expect out of it once we are able to implement some offshore wind?
Well, you know, these projects will be done in phases. I think the potential in the Gulf of Maine is around, you know, 5 to maybe 10 gigawatts, depending on how much development and how far up and down the coast. So it's a huge power source. And when you think about the comparison, Seabrook is 1.6 gigawatts. It provides about half the electricity for the state of New Hampshire, but then the rest of it is shipped, you know, is put into ISO New England. So, you know, if we did, let's say we did an initial procurement of, imagine, 800 megawatts, which is the size of some of the offshore wind development that's now steel in the water down off of Massachusetts. So that would, I'm guessing, around 400,000 homes, something like that. So you could quite quickly handle our energy needs, plus supplying energy into the grid, and then also being able to anticipate when we electrify all the cars, which is coming faster than anybody could have imagined. You know, you're not going to be able to buy a non-electric car from Ford or GM, you know, within 10, 15 years. That's the potential there. And the timeline here is that if we get the BOEM process going again this fall, which is likely that there'll be a meeting, then they have to define a lease area, and then the businesses come in and bid on those lease areas. And so we might see 5 to 7 years from now this power could come online.
Well, it's very exciting. And as you mentioned earlier, David, it means jobs and good local jobs. And certainly it also means reducing rates overall. Local distributed generation reduces our rates, reduces transmission costs allocated to the state of New Hampshire. In terms of other initiatives, can you go into some detail about some of the specific components of the bipartisan infrastructure package that was passed in Washington, D.C. that, you know, the House has yet to take action on, but hopefully passes, and what would that mean for New Hampshire?
Well, I did get a breakdown from the White House of the money that would coming in, and it's hundreds of millions of dollars. And of course, the roads and bridges, the red listed roads and bridges, and that's important, and that's an energy issue too, because they're in better repair than you use less energy when you're driving on them. It also includes the broadband infrastructure, and I mentioned that in part because of economic development, but it also has to do with transportation, that you can have smart roads if you have broadband. And then it has a lot of money to build out the electric vehicle charging infrastructure. And that will be huge. It's not just New Hampshire users, but tourists, and the auto dealers are clamoring for it because they see electric cars coming. But you need broadband for the charging station network, so they can be interconnected, people know where they are, and the metering can get done. There's also some money in there for coastal resilience, which is, you know, thank you, Congressman Pappas, and thank you, Senator Hassan, who worked really hard to make sure that there was some substantial funding, infrastructure. I mean, the broadband I mentioned, they worked hard on. But this coastal resilience and money going into transportation for resilience along our coastal roads, that's in there, and that's going to be awfully important for us as well. And finally, I mentioned this substantial money for updating the grid. Now, that is grid reliability and resiliency. You know, think back to an ice storm. resiliency is good. But it also means we can have smart grid. We can deal with this distributed generation. We can deal with, you know, the net metering. We can, you know, find ways to save money by time of use rates. I mean, all kinds of things you can do with a smart grid. And that money is in there. And that's going to be big for New Hampshire.
And as you mentioned, David, with the electrification of the grid, electrification of transportation, more electric vehicles hooking up to the grid, that's going to be absolutely critical. David, what is the status of the Volkswagen settlement money that New Hampshire had received now, I think, 5 years ago. And where is that at, and is it being deployed?
Yeah, well, it's a good question, Dan. And, it was great. The governor made an initial commitment to say the maximum that could go into EV charging, into school buses, and into various state agencies like the DOT should go into that. And I had passed a bill. We had a commission. It created a report, maps, and so forth of where we should do it. And an RFP was put out that was just not suitable for the industry, and it failed. And that was about almost 2 years ago now. And then the effort stalled for a lot of reasons. But I can report I had a meeting this week, and it looks like we're going to be back on track to get the Volkswagen funds out for the fast charge system on our major transportation corridors. And the hope is, knock on wood, we'll get successful bids, and that by the end of 2022, we could have that system deployed. The other one is the school buses, and that RFP failed as well. But the timing now is right. There are a lot more school buses coming, being produced that are electric and are efficient and cheaper. And then there are some creative ways to find ways to finance the cost differential between a standard bus and electric vehicle. And I will be putting in a bill that will allow those batteries to be used as storage, and then the utilities and private companies will be all over buying the school buses for the school districts so that they can, they can use that charging infrastructure that's in those batteries. So I'm really hoping we'll see some progress on getting that money out, as quickly as possible, because we stalled out for a couple of years, Dan.
And of course, President Biden recently announced new emission standards, and a part of that, as you well know and alluded to, that 50% of vehicles sold in the U.S. by 2030 will be electric, or that's potentially what's going to happen. And a lot has to take place before that can become a reality, and, probably less expensive electric cars and more charging stations. I mean, it's, we say 2030 and we think it's a long way off, but it really isn't. It's pretty much right around the corner. And you think by that time, I think electric vehicles are coming down in cost right now. And I guess maybe that trend will continue. But as a lot of things have to come to fruition before that takes place.
Erica, it's a very ambitious goal. I work a lot with the auto dealers. Mm-hmm. And Senate Transportation and my bills on this. And it's like, that's very ambitious. But I think the stars are aligning, and that we know that several of the European companies and countries have said they won't allow the sale of non-electric vehicles after, England is 2025, which is mind-boggling. The other European countries are like 2030, 2035, but those companies are committed to going electric, and now GM and Ford are committed to it. I think what's telling is what's happened with the Ford 150. That's America's truck, right? Great vehicle.
Yep.
And they came out with an electric version that's going to be available in the next year. And they thought, early adopters, boutique kind of thing, the orders are off the charts. They're going to have to open up a second factory to start filling those orders. And it's because not only are they great vehicles, but look what you get. You get a generating station. So if you drop out to the job, you can plug in all your power equipment off the truck. And so, people in the trades see this and say, or even if you're going to go camping,
Yeah.
So I think the demand will increase, but it's a very ambitious goal. And it shows why the charging infrastructure is essential, because you're not going to get people to buy the cars if they don't think they can charge them up. A lot of people do their charging at home. That's what I do. But if you're going to be out on the highway, you want to know you can pull up. GM is working on a fast charger that will give you 80% in 5 minutes. Mm. The others are, like 10 to 20 minutes what will be coming along. And I think it's kind of push and pull. They see the charging, and then the cars are available. People are going to buy them. And the price differential is coming down quickly, but the bill, the infrastructure bill, continues the $7,500 government, tax rebate. And then there's another provision there now. It's going to be a $12,500 rebate if it is American-made. Great for American labor, for American jobs, but, you know, the price differential goes poof with both those numbers, really. And so I think we're going to see some, you know, very competitive by price. And once you drive one of these vehicles, and they have faster acceleration than anything that's powered by gas, and they have better handling because the weight's distributed better. So people are going to like these, but it's an ambitious call.
No, it is definitely ambitious. I know my friend Dan here is planning to drive to Iowa in the not-too-distant future. And I just wonder, you know, right now, anyway, it would be tough to do it in an electric vehicle in terms of, you know, being, you know, slowing down and in terms of being able to, you know, to charge it. I don't know how long they take now to charge or how many charging stations there would be. And you'd have to plan your trip, Dan, a lot differently than you currently are.
Yeah, how long is your extension cord, Dan?
Exactly. 1,000+ miles.
If you've got a Tesla, you're good. If you're stopping overnight to charge, you're good. But, you know, this is exactly the point, that we have to guarantee that on the major travel corridors, you can pull off at a truck stop, you can get a cup of coffee, plug it in, 20 minutes later, get another couple hundred miles on your car, and off you go.
And that's so absolutely, David, and that's so critical why deploying that Volkswagen settlement money here in New Hampshire and getting those charging stations to the level that they should be in New Hampshire is critical. It's not just in terms of combating the climate crisis and good jobs and that sort of thing. It's also a tourism thing. I mean, people who are in Massachusetts who have an electric vehicle, if there's more availability of charging stations to our neighbors to the east in Maine or to the west in Vermont, that dictates some decisions.
Yeah, and, you know, 40% of the vehicles being sold in Quebec are now electric. So, we're targeting the North Country. And 302 and some of the transportation hubs up there with these fast charge systems because, you know, it's not just people going up from Massachusetts and elsewhere with electric vehicles. It's also folks from Quebec coming down. They're big for our tourist economy. So
absolutely,
we'll get there. We'll get there. I hope by the end of next year we're, you know, charged up and ready to go.
Get it charged up.
Yeah, exactly. But why? I'm just surprised that 40% of the new vehicles sold in the province of Quebec are electric. Now that's an amazing statistic right there.
Yep. Well, you see, Quebec and California are joining us in those California standards, and some other states are now have just voted to join it as well. And that has become, you know, a real vehicle, no pun intended, for really ramping up the sales of these vehicles.
I would guess so. And incrementally they are coming down in price a little bit. And then you mentioned with that that rebate, if it's made in the U.S., $12,500 is nothing to sneeze at, that's for sure.
Well, we're going to see in the next year some really great new vehicles coming out at a lower price. There's the Hyundai vehicle coming out. I mean, and there's going to be a cheaper Tesla, too. There's a lot of Chinese cars. They are trying to grab this market. And, I mean, I think this is what's smart about what the Biden administration is doing in this Buy American bill and the China bill they passed, the $250 billion there, because there's no reason why these cars shouldn't be manufactured here. And we know we can make the best cars in the world. And so I think that it'd be very important for us to get these less expensive cars out there. And they're coming. They're coming. But they'll get a big boost with the charging infrastructure, and they'll get a big boost out of the bills that the Congress is passing to make sure the American workforce is the one that produces them.
No, that is certainly great, and great for jobs, and great for our environment as well. No doubt about that. Now, what is our network like here in New Hampshire in terms of charging stations right now? I know you say, David, you charge yours at home, and I'm sure a lot of people do that. But if you're coming from out of state, our tourists, what is our current charging network like here in the Granite State?
Well, what you can do is you can go on a website. I mean, ChargePoint is a company that provides chargers, but you can go on their website and you can get a map of New Hampshire or put your destination in. It'll tell you what all the charging stations are available, and it'll tell you if a car is already parked at one of them.
Oh.
So you know if it's available or not. And you'll see. There is a charging network out there. A lot of municipalities have moved forward, put them in their parking garages, or some businesses have them out in front of their businesses. Some car dealerships have them. And then on Route 93 now, we do have Tesla is there. A Tesla you can charge up at the rest stops there. But, you know, one of the bills I got passed a few years ago said that anything that's on state property from now on or using state funding is going to be universal. Anybody can use the charging station.
Yep.
And that's the way we'll move. But we've got some catch-up to do. You can manage. You might have to plan a little bit. You know, because I have a electric plug-in hybrid that I kind of can look and say, oh, if I'm in Portsmouth, I go charge it up there if I want to. Or, you know, if I'm over in Concord, or if I'm up in Lebanon, you can find them. But we need more.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But, you know, with the price of gas going up just about every day now, I'm sure more and more people are thinking about electric cars in their future.
Well, the car actually calculates this for you. But I'm spending, sometimes I'm on gas and sometimes on electric in my car. I get about 50 miles on a charge. I can charge it up at home, a level 2 charger, which costs about $1,200-$1,300 to install. You get about 25 miles added to your battery for every hour, so I just plug it in at night and I'm good to go. But I'm paying about $1.10 equivalent for the cost of the electricity to a gallon of gas. So I'm saving almost a third. I mean, it's almost two-thirds saving having the electric, and that piles up pretty fast to pay back for any price differential you might have seen when you bought the car.
Yeah, I'm sure more and more people are thinking about that without question. Before we let you go, Senator, where else do our deficiencies lie here in New Hampshire in terms of energy and energy conservation, and how can we improve?
Well, two things. The cheapest energy is energy you don't use.
Right.
So energy efficiency, and frankly, we're well behind this. On this, there's money that's sitting there to be sent to help weatherize lower-income folks' homes. It's sitting there, and the PUC has just sat on it. And there are political reasons for that, unfortunately. People resisting that, but that money, it's there. It's one of the best ways that we can help lower-income folks reduce their costs and also reduce the amount of energy that we use. Other states are ahead of us on efficiency, and that's why we're using a larger percentage of the electricity in New England, because we're not doing the efficiency work. So there's lots of ways to improve that. And the second thing, and Dan certainly is a veteran on this, is that we've got to just take off the cap on net metering entirely. We've got to let municipalities and businesses and customers, homeowners, make their own choices to generate their own power for their workplaces, their businesses, their homes. And then we need to modernize our transmission regulation so that people can produce this energy, put it out in the grid. That is one of the biggest things that we could do right now to make energy cheaper and also to increase the supply.
No question about it.
Are there states right now that are using offshore wind for power?
We have two very small fields that are operating now. But within the next few years, there's massive development. Vineyard Wind is good to go. There's off New York, New Jersey, massive development there, off North Carolina and Virginia. These are all coming on soon. So we're going to see in the next few years just an enormous transformation in it. There's about 30 gigawatts of offshore wind, which is in the planning and proposed phase right now. And that's just the mind-boggling number. I mean, that's like 20 to 25 Seabrooks. So this is, it's just huge. It's coming on, and you know, we're finally there. It seems like a distance, and you know, this is operating already all over Europe and in Asia. Yeah. You know, you go to Germany, Denmark, Scotland, England. Lots of those countries have been doing this for many years, and we can learn a lot from it. I mean, one thing we're going to see in New Hampshire probably is the production of hydrogen, as well as the electricity that they'll use electricity right on the, at the side of the turbine to produce hydrogen. And you can use that as a storage fuel, but you can also use that to power heavy trucks and then heavy industry, which just really can't operate on electricity or natural gas and create the heats that they and the supply that they need for that. So that's what, you know, Germany's doing that a lot right now, dedicating towers to hydrogen production. So I'm sure we're going to see some of that as well. And it gives you great flexibility because then you have solar, you've got offshore wind, you've got hydrogen, you've got hydro, you got biomass. You get this mix of sources that really puts you on where you want to be. And, you know, Seabrook is closing in 2045, right? So, you know, half of our power goes poof. We don't find a way to replace it. And offshore wind, the calendar for offshore wind is really, you know, very good because we'll have it, you know, next 5 to 7 years, and then Seabrook will phase out and we'll have more offshore wind coming in to replace it.
Well, it's all very exciting. And Senator Waters, we certainly appreciate all that you do for the state of New Hampshire.
Thank you so much, David.
Well, thanks to you, Cal. Thanks, Dan, for the opportunity, and I'm very optimistic about where New Hampshire can be.
Let's keep it moving forward.
Outstanding. Very good. Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Senator David Waters, who represents Dover, also Barrington, Rollinsford, and Somersworth. So great areas near the seacoast of New Hampshire, and we appreciate David being with us today here on Feltus and Kale. We are at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, where you can hear a lot of the previous segments of Feltus and Kale, and we're proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feltus and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Dan Feltus?
Ken Kale.
Do you own an electric car?
I do not.
Okay. Nor do I, but would you consider it?
Aaron and I were just having that conversation the other day.
Yeah.
We were. I mean, we're going to have to get a new car pretty soon, and that's what we're thinking about doing.
Well, my daughter, actually, who lives in Massachusetts, actually just leased one.
Oh, yeah.
And it amazed me that how little the monthly payment is. Of course, you know, you are limited mileage-wise with a lease, and the lease is, I think, for 12,000 miles a year, so you are pretty restricted. But she just uses it to get, you know, back and forth to her job, which is, you know, about 10 miles away from where she lives. So she's just going to use it basically for that and use their other vehicle, which is gas-powered. For, you know, family trips and that sort of thing. But I tell you what, I heard, well, let's put it this way. I didn't hear it start up. I was down there yesterday, and I did not hear it start up. It's amazing. It's just absolutely noiseless. It's really something, and she's really enjoying it. And so, you know, it is the trend of the future. There's no question about it.
No question about it. Technology is really advancing. The prices are coming down. We heard a little bit about the tax credits that you can get for them, too, and that's great. And on top of that, it's about, you know, there's a competition right now, a significant one with China and others on making these vehicles. And we ought to win the clean energy future jobs of tomorrow right here in the United States.
And it's good to hear there will be a tax credit, or at least a proposed one, that $12,500 if you buy your electric vehicle that's manufactured in the U.S.
You got it. Yep.
So that is great. Great for jobs. Great for the economy. And, you know, that's the trend. And I don't know if the goal will be reached. 50% of the vehicles sold in the U.S. by 2030, you know, being electric. But, You know, I tell you what, I wouldn't be surprised. The only thing that concerns me is the fact that, let's hope anyway, the infrastructure will be there by then in terms of the charging stations, because that's really what holds the key right there.
Yeah, you need those charging stations, no doubt about it. I mean, we just talked about it. It's not just an issue for each individual driver. It's a tourism issue for the state of New Hampshire to get those up and running across the state, including the northern part of the state with Quebec drivers coming in. We want to make sure that New Hampshire is a place where people with electric vehicles continue to come to and recreate and engage in our economy. So it's critical.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that 40% of the new vehicles sold in the province of Quebec, which borders New Hampshire, are electric. It's amazing. I don't think the percentage is quite that high here in the U.S., but in Quebec, 40%. And as the senator pointed out, southern Quebec, Quebec City, Montreal, people from south of even those cities are, very much involved in our tourism dollar here in the state of New Hampshire.
No question about it. We got to make sure that those charging stations are there so the folks continue to come into New Hampshire from Quebec. And, the electric vehicle infrastructure is one part of it. The electrification of transportation generally and the grid. Key dollars coming through in the bipartisan transportation and infrastructure legislation. Hopefully that passes. That will help support New Hampshire. Also key provisions in there that were secured by Senator Hassan for coastal resiliency projects, making sure we take care of our communities and making sure we adjust accordingly to protect our businesses and communities on the seacoast as sea levels continue to rise. Now, these are all part of a big puzzle, Ken, no doubt about it. And, New Hampshire is about middle of the pack in some things and way behind in other things. And certainly we need to continue to move forward on energy efficiency, renewable energy standards, electric vehicle charging infrastructure and stations, and offshore wind. Those are all big pieces of how to move forward in a way that creates jobs and lowers rates.
No question. So, maybe my next vehicle, if there is in fact a next vehicle in my future, might be electric. Who knows? It might be electric. We'll see. It's Feldis and Kale.
It wouldn't shock me.
Oh, yeah. There's that there Democratic humor again. It's Feldis and Kale here at 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Dan, I do another program once a week on this radio station called Balance of Power. And one of the co-hosts, one of the panelists on that show is former two-time Congressman Paul Hodes. And Paul is a noted musician.
Yep, he sure is.
Yeah, and has performed a lot with his wife and others over the years. And his band is now called Calamity Jane Doe. Calamity Jane Doe.
Interesting.
And I heard today from Paul that he is going to be appearing August 19th at the Kittery, Maine Community Center at 6 o'clock. And he wanted me to mention that. So if you want to see Paul Hodes and his band Calamity Jane Doe in action, it is Thursday, August 19th, 6 p.m. at the Kittery, Maine Community Center. So
there
you can see the former congressman playing his electric guitar.
That'd be exciting. And you can check out some of these coastal resiliency projects.
At the same time when you go to Kittery. Yeah. And you probably check out the outlets in Kittery, too, stores in Kittery, of which there are many. Feldis and Kale is the name of the show, and we are on 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Ken Kale, Dan Feldis with you as we are every weekday at 11:05. This show is first airing on Tuesday, August the 17th. And you know what? If you're listening to this during its first airing on the 17th, the 19th of this month is the start of Market Days. How about that?
Market Days is back.
Thursday and Friday and Saturday in downtown Concord. We talked about it a couple of weeks back here on Feldis and Kale, but the event, which did not take place last year due to COVID restrictions, is back with a vengeance and will open up on Thursday of this week, Thursday the 19th, from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. in downtown Concord. There's going to be three music venues, all kinds of activities for the kids. It's a total family event. And I think what, you know, the music is great. The kids' activities are terrific. But I think everybody looks forward to the food and beverage at
Absolutely.
This event.
I mean, last time, 2019, you know, I was going around with then presidential candidate Governor Steve Bullock, governor of Montana. And I swear to God, we had... I don't know, like 15 different meals, and just kept on buying food, and it's amazing food. It's just a terrific experience, and a lot of great to get out and about, see people, a lot of great vendors, a lot of great small businesses downtown, and showcased, and organizations, and events, and as you said, Ken, plenty of activities for adults and kids. They got some stages, some music. You got some kids activities. And I think we heard from In Town Concord, they even have a, is it a dog pool for
yes,
dogs?
Yes, that's
to
right. Yeah, keep
cool
those dogs
and,
cool. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and you'll see all kinds of dogs, too. That's one of the, you know, the features of it as well. People walking up and down Main Street, because Main Street is shut off for the most part. And then there's going to be a movie on Friday night.
Yeah.
American Graffiti.
Yeah.
You know, it's
one of your favorites.
I love it. I haven't seen it in, you know, probably 30 years, but Friday night, courtesy of Red River Theater, right by the theater on South Main Street, you'll be able to watch it absolutely free. So bring your lawn chairs, bring your blankets, whatever you want to sit on, and you can watch it right in the middle of the street in downtown Concord.
Yeah, yeah. Great experience. You should do it and take advantage of it. The market day is downtown Concord. Get down there.
You only get that opportunity to see that free movie in the middle of the street once a year on during market days. And probably, oh, let's hope anyway, and not because you know, it's a bad time or anything like that. Hopefully this will be the only market days during the month of August. It's usually in June. But it had to be moved to August because of COVID concerns and what have you. So it's going to be this week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, downtown Concord, 10 to 10 each day. And you get more information at intownconcord.org. So check that out. It's going to be a terrific event and bring the entire family. It's fun for all ages, as they say. So check it out. Lot of fun. So that'll be this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in downtown Concord. Today, by the way, Dan, the 17th of August is Black Cat Appreciation Day.
Well, for folks who are
superstitious,
today is your day.
That it is. I had a black cat once.
Oh, you did?
By the very creative name of Fluffy.
That's a good name.
Very, very.
Did you avoid it walking in front of you?
I tried to as best I could. Unfortunately, Fluffy met a very untimely end. But we won't get into that here on this program. Today is also a thrift shop day. Thrift shop day. I remember there was one in my hometown. There are any number in this area. You get some great deals.
You really do.
Those thrift shops. So take advantage of that. And it's also Nonprofit Day as well. And we who have worked in radio for a long time know about nonprofit.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah.
That's
they right. don't. I don't think they mean it that way, however. Just recognize the great nonprofit agencies in this vicinity. And it is their day. So help them as best you possibly can.
And there's a lot of great ones.
There are.
There really is in New Hampshire. And I think nhnonprofit.org, I think, is the website. You can go check out a number of nonprofits and all the great work that they do. But the nonprofit sector in New Hampshire really powers a lot the activity, not just philanthropy and helping people who need it most, but also kind of driving innovation in our economy, helping with substance use disorder treatment, helping with mental health treatment, critical part of the economy, critical part of our community, and the healthcare infrastructure, among many other things that they do.
No question about that. And that will do it for this version of Feldis and Kale. We thank you for joining us. Join us next time, powered by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers.